Well, that's awkward. Keo and Kelly picked the exact same date to deliver their State of the State addresses. Did Keo use his spotlight to take a jab at the Kansas governor for stealing the Chiefs, or was it the other way around?
Our beloved Chiefs are coming home to Kansas.
Plus, Emmanuel Cleaver demanding answers as the Washington Post name-checks Kansas City as the site of a new mass ICE detention center. And our panelists answer a slew of your questions this week, from Zona Rosa to Prairie Fire to more pesky concerns about the new Chiefs deal and the still yet to be decided future of the Kansas City Royals.
Week in Review is made possible through the generous support of Dave and Jamie Cummings, Bob and Marlise Gourley, the Courtney S. Turner Charitable Trust, John H. Mize, and Bank of America N.A. co-trustees. The Francis Family Foundation, through the discretionary fund of David and Janice Francis. And by viewers like you. Thank you.
Hello and welcome, I'm Nick Haynes, and we are glad you could join us on our journey through the week's most impactful, confusing and downright head-scratching local news stories, hopping on board the Week in Review bus with us this week from the primetime anchor desk at KNBC 9 News, Chris Ketz, tracking the region's top political stories for KCUR News, Brian Ellison, from KSHB 41 News, political reporter Charlie Keegan, and former Star reporter, editorial writer, now on Substack, Dave Helling.
I'm a subscriber, by the way.
Okay.
Just let the record reflect.
We all are subscribers. Yes.
I've been promoting you.
Thank you.
We got questions about it, too, coming up, so you'll hear that later in the show. Now, we used to have an engineer, by the way, around here who would start snoring in my little earpiece any time we showed a shot of the Kansas or Missouri state houses. I'm not kidding. I know some people yawn at state news, but it can have a huge impact on your life. That big Chiefs stadium move, of course, is just the latest example. Now time is running out for one of the most visible players in that deal. This week, former Governor Laura Kelly delivered her final State of the State address, her last big speech before voters pick her replacement in November.
This is my first time standing before all of you since we announced some very exciting, historic, actually game-changing news for our state. Our beloved Chiefs are coming home to Kansas.
All right, Brian, so how did that go down with Mike Kehoe? Did he respond in kind by jabbing at Kansas?
No, if you were playing a drinking game watching the State of the State speech in Missouri and you had stadium or Chiefs or Royals, for that matter, on your card, you're still stone cold sober. It did not come up, and I think the Missouri lawmakers may be ready to move on, except perhaps to take a few digs at Kansas's.
We might not be seeing her much more in public life, Dave. I mean, was there anything significant that she said in her speech? Did she announce, for instance, she's changed her mind, she's now running for the United States Senate to be our next senator in Kansas?
No, she's not apparently in that race. This is it. And it was a bit of a victory lap, as the last State of the State always is, to talk about things that she feels she has accomplished, not just in the last year, but over her entire terms in office in Kansas. She knows that the upcoming legislative session will be all about the next governor and the fights that will accrue because of that campaign.
I was a little surprised that there wasn't more of a victory lap when it came to landing the Chiefs on the Kansas side.
Yeah. Well,
As the details of this deal have come out, did you want Patrick Mahomes throwing a ball? Well, something along those lines, yes. And I think if the reaction had been different, you might have seen that.
Now, I can't remember actually the last time it happened, but Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe was actually delivering his State of the State address on the very same day as Laura Kelly was. And he made clear his number one priority, putting an amendment before voters in August to eliminate the state income tax.
If we are serious about building a foundation for growth, to compete rather than be complacent, then we must begin the work now to phase out and eliminate Missouri's individual income tax.
If you enjoy paying substantially higher taxes on just about everything you buy, then you'll love Tax Hike Mike's plan.
If it goes before voters in August and people see on the ballot, you don't have to pay income taxes anymore, is anybody going to vote no to that?
Oh, it'll be the easiest campaign ever, because there will probably, in all likelihood, not be any sort of well-funded opposition against this. But the thing that I was interested in, last year, the Missouri income tax amounted to 65% of, what was it, $13 or $14 billion in revenue came in, 65%.
Well, and the proposal that the only alternative to that funding that was raised by the governor was sort of increasing sales taxes on a few digital platforms, e-books, AI. Clearly not enough money to cover
the cutting $600 million from the state budget. Well, that's another saving.
To do that now to carry over.
Okay. Yeah. Promise not to increase sales taxes on agriculture, right, on health care, on real estate. It's really still unclear where this money will come from, and he doesn't seem overly concerned about that at this stage.
Yeah. The income tax in Missouri brings in about $9 billion a year into the general fund, the individual income tax. So you have to theoretically replace most of that money. $600 million in reductions won't get you there. So I disagree with my friend Chris Katz a little bit. I don't think this will be a slam dunk election. I do think people will say that I don't want to pay another 4, 5, or 6% at the grocery store or the Walmart or the furniture store or the car dealership in exchange for a reduction in income taxes, which I don't really pay anyway. The overall burden in Missouri is one of the lowest in the nation. And as I said on my Substack the other day, if you get Social Security, for example, you don't pay any taxes on that now. What the governor is proposing is an elimination of income taxes, which you don't pay, but higher sales taxes.
Okay, that was the big priority. That was got all of the oxygen this week. But I did see, Charlie, that lawmakers did move to punish the Chiefs for moving by stripping the team of its designation as Missouri's official football team. That honor would now be bestowed on the Battle Hawks, the St. Louis-based team which plays in the XFL. Is this the equivalent of the Chiefs being stripped of one of their Super Bowl rings, Charlie?
Well, probably not even that significant. This is just kind of petty, right, at a certain point. This is just a... lawmakers feeling like they have to do something to punish the Chiefs for leaving.
You know, Nick, let's give the Battle Hawks their due. They really rolled right over the San Antonio Brahmas and the Houston Gamblers this year. They did fall a bit short in the conference final against the D.C. Defenders. But I think they could really use the state's support.
All right. Well, Kansas lawmakers headed back to work this week, 1 week later than Missouri legislators. The lawmakers there are borrowing from Missouri's playbook, though, pushing to ban DEI programs, outlawing cell phones in classrooms. They're also proposing new restrictions on electric scooters. And perhaps the biggest issue of all, they want you to decide at the ballot box in August a new constitutional amendment to cap home assessment increases to 3% a year.
How many of you seniors can afford more property taxes?
When I originally bought this place, I didn't think the value would actually double in, 8 years?
All righty, Dave. Now, you said that it may not be a slam dunk in Missouri with income tax if it's on the ballot, but if you have the opportunity to vote in August, you're already incensed by how much you're paying on property taxes, and you see a measure here that will only restrict it to 3%. Why wouldn't you vote yes?
Assessments would go up 3%, but not taxes necessarily. And what every subdivision could do and would likely do is just raise their mill levy higher to cover the shortfall in assessment adjustments. So it won't mean a tax break for most Kansans. They may be able to see that and vote accordingly.
Here's the other thing. You raise the possibility of real inequity in how taxes are distributed. If this piece of property goes up 20% in value and this one only 3%, do we really believe that this person who has now far more assets should still only pay the same amount of increase as this person who is struggling to get by?
And who suffers most from that? New home buyers, new home construction, younger families trying to get into the housing market. So it is not as simple as just saying we're going to cap assessment increases at 3%. Over 10 years, that's 30% when a home typically doubles in that time. It's much, much more difficult and complicated than people know.
I think it's one of those things that looks good on paper, maybe a little bit like the Chiefs deal in Kansas, but once you start peeling away the layers and studying the details, you maybe come away with a different take.
Well, 5 years ago, we were punishing people for not wearing masks. Now we're punishing people for wearing them. The head of the Jackson County Legislature pushing a new ordinance this week that would ban ICE agents and law enforcement officers from wearing face coverings while on duty.
We're not seeing police officers in Independence or Blue Springs who are covering their badges or covering their faces. The goal is accountability.
It's the first move of Mania Barker, who has just been voted in this week as the chair of the Jackson County Legislature. But does Jackson County have any authority, Charlie, to tell local law enforcement what they can wear? And more significantly, can they tell federal agents what to do?
Well, especially when it comes to federal agents, even the county councilors told the legislators that, no, they don't think that the county law would apply to these federal agents, and they're not sold on this proposal that's come through. And Sheriff Daryl Forte here has pushed back, too, saying that he doesn't want to follow this law even for his deputies in the county.
They can certainly suggest for Jackson County Sheriff's deputies whether they can or not, but that doesn't extend to individual police departments. It certainly doesn't extend to the federal side of this.
Can you refresh our memories, Chris, as to why there is an effort, though, to cover your face as an agent?
Yeah, federal agents are—they're worried about being identified. They're worrying about being doxxed, especially in this digital age where information flows so fast on social media. So there isn't that—that's their argument there. But I think whether it's the city of Denver or the state of California, and there will be other states and municipalities considering this. This is just the first of what I think will be something that a lot of municipalities will be doing this year.
The other side of this, of course, is are they now going to be just having lots of lawsuits over this, costing Jackson County taxpayers plenty of money for moving on this issue that they may not have control over?
I think that certainly is a risk. Jackson County legislature has been down this road before, and I was especially interested in the way that it set up a tension right out of the gate. The very first week in office for Manny Abarca as the legislature president with the sheriff, Daryl Forte, he used some very strong language, even said, well, maybe we needed a new sheriff then.
The other thing is enforcement, Nick. Assuming this passes, well, are the sheriff's deputies going to go to the ICE officers and issue them tickets, arrest them? I mean, so that's a challenge, or would be a challenge. This is highly performative. It is not unusual for politics in 2026 for people to take stands based on what they say rather than what they would actually do.
Now, it was a big week of news relating to anything to do with a federal immigration agency called ICE. Kansas City Congressman Emanuel Cleaver is demanding answers after the Washington Post name-checks Kansas City as the site of a new mass detention center. According to the report, we are one of seven cities that would house thousands of detainees in a renovated industrial warehouse. Is this just all talk, Charlie, and media speculation? Or is a site being picked for this?
Well, our reporters covering this are hearing about addresses and locations that could be in consideration in Kansas City. So I think there might be some substantive details.
As we are recording this program right now, ICE officials apparently are looking at a warehouse site in South Kansas City. Now, if that happens, expect some blowback from people like Mayor Lucas, from people on the city council, certainly from Congressman Cleaver. Taking it a step further, whether that will change things, I think, is an open question.
Ever since President Trump was inaugurated the second term, there has been talk of Leavenworth being this major facility. There have been fights over it. Nothing has happened. So why would this be any different, Brian?
Well, in that case, CoreCivic, which operates private prisons, has been in this sort of longstanding, essentially, zoning dispute with the city of Leavenworth. They had some leverage because they have responsibility for zoning regulations. In this case, it could be that the federal government has gotten into this warehouse before the city could take action to stop that from happening.
The thing about CoreCivic, too, is the CoreCivic has applied for a special use permit to the city of Leavenworth. That's a process that takes about 3 months. And then it will be up to the city commission to make that final call. Yep.
I want us to think about what we're seeing, for example, in Minneapolis right now, and the level of community outrage over the actions of ICE in that space, the protests, the activism, the blowing of whistles, the confrontations with ICE agents. It is not out of the question that you would start to see those things right here in the city limits of Kansas City if a detention center opens.
And as Emanuel Cleaver referenced, during the World Cup. And I also note that Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe providing more money this week to deploy Missouri National Guard troops when the World Cup comes to town as well in June.
Yes. I mean, that was the other major focus of his State of the State address, or one of a few focuses, was crime and safety. And the deployment of National Guard troops during World Cup didn't necessarily land on appreciative ears in Kansas City.
Now, you may have noticed that some members of the public are now ringing the alarm bells on anything that hints of the word ICE. This week, there were reports of dozens of ICE vehicles being spotted in a parking lot near Worlds of Fun. But as it turns out, it wasn't an enforcement action at all, but the vehicles were getting decals put on them by an automotive company. Was that the...
That's what we heard from City Councilman Jonathan Duncan told us, that, yeah, a local decal graphics company was just the one working on a contract to put the wraps on all these SUVs for the Department of Homeland Security.
Now, one thing I love about this program is that every week we are inundated with emails and social media messages from you. And as much as we try to do, on this program, you always still have questions we didn't quite answer for you. Well, we're going to take care of that this week, starting with Mark, who wants to know, why do we have to wait 3 years to learn the inner workings of the new Chiefs deal in Kansas? Wyandotte County says there's a confidentiality agreement in place until 2029. It sounds fishy to me, he says. That was a Channel 9 story.
KNBC 9's Matt Fleener did some strong reporting on this particular piece, as usual. And we were just looking for routine communications with the principals involved when it came to the Chiefs deal with the unified government. Now, did we know that there was a state law that keeps these communications secret for 3 years? I'm not sure we did. We know now, and everybody else knows now. And here's the thing to Mark and everybody else, and we all know this at this table. When it comes to transparency, when it comes to government transparency, the state of Kansas is not going to be winning any sort of a medal for that anytime soon. Getting even the most pedestrian information out of the state can be very, very difficult. Kansas isn't unique in that, but until many, many more people like Mark raise up, ask questions, make a stink about it, this is never going to change.
Andy writes, while Olathe leaders had been working in secret to land the new Chiefs headquarters, there's reporting that Wyandotte County wasn't even told about the deal until shortly before it was announced. Is that really true?
Well, I think that's the claim from some Wyandotte County officials that Crystal Watson was sort of called and said, hey, come on down to Topeka. We're going to make the big announcement.
Even though it's going to be right there in the heart of her county?
Yeah. There is justifiable outrage at Kansas secrecy on this deal, Nick. The day that the LCC voted on this deal, they closed the meeting. You couldn't even get the briefing in public just before the vote. That is breathtakingly bad. Having said that, if Wyandotte County has to make a decision on whether to participate or not, there will be some public disclosure of what they're being asked to do and what they're going to vote on. And so I think we'll know those details. What I think Chris and Charlie and Brian are worried about, and rightly so, is the intergovernment communication behind the scenes to see what was talked about and what wasn't.
But that was that really much that different with the Panasonic plant? That, you know, for a long time, that was just known as the mystery plant, even though they were spending $1 billion in state tax dollars.
That's a good point. Yeah, for a long time, it was just kind of this project and this economic development project. Just trust us, guys. It's going to be good. We're going to roll this out. You got to spend money to make money.
And we have to point out on both projects, these were bipartisan affairs, and it was these major Republican leaders who are now running for governor who are also behind those deals.
The only other thing that I would add to what Dave is talking about is maybe there wasn't a formal notification to Crystal Watson and the UG, but once the Hunt family apparently signed off on this deal on that Friday before, I mean, it was the worst-kept secret in Topeka. So I find it hard to believe that they did think it wasn't coming. But again, maybe in terms of a formal notification, maybe that's what was lacking.
Right to ask, and all of us are right to ask, what was communicated beforehand and what commitments were or were not made, if any. The public has a right to know that. And I blame Laura Kelly for 99% of this. She likes to do business in secret, and this is another example.
Well, viewer John writes, Dave Helling said last week that the stadium deal can still happen even if Wyandotte County says no to giving up some of its local sales taxes to help fund it. So why would any city voluntarily give up its local sales tax revenue if the project is going to happen anyway? What's the benefit?
Well, there could be potentially benefits in Wyandotte County, including, of course, having the Chiefs in your community. You could write language, Nick, that would say the jobs have to be offered to Wyandotte Countyans first. There are all kinds of provisions that could be made. We talked a little bit about the Wyandotte County ticket provision. That might be a part of it. But by and large, you're right. It's not completely clear if the benefits to Wyandotte County or Johnson County exceed the cost that they'll have to pay if they're full participants in this deal.
Well, Carol writes, Platte County just washed its hands of Zona Rosa and said they'll no longer be involved in funding shopping centers. Meanwhile, Prairie Fire is defaulting on its bonds again after missing its sales tax projections. Is there a lesson here for Kansas leaders as they weigh up this latest Chiefs deal, Charlie?
I hope there is. You know, Prairie Fire is this development down there, 135th and Nall, that has defaulted on Star bonds and now defaulted on a community improvement district bond, and both using sales tax money to pay for those bonds. They're going to rely on the very same setup for a stadium that's a lot smaller than Prairie.
But I always read those stories, and I think, well, this is really interesting. And then you always see working down further down. Well, the taxpayers are really not on the hook, though.
Well, but it depends what you mean by on the hook. You know, okay. when you guarantee loans, when you shortchange other potential recipients of tax revenues, is the local entity on the hook? I mean, the same thing happened in Zona Rosa with the bond defaults there. I think it's very likely, Nick, that the impact on not only Kansas leaders but all local leaders in the future is they just need to pay more attention to the details and to what degree the municipalities are on the hook. They're going to keep offering those incentives, though. There's no question that that's part of local government today.
And a good way to understand the Chief's deal, Nick, is to look at Prairie Fire and say they're defaulting on bonds. But if you took their star bond district and exploded it through all of Johnson exactly. County, they would have all the money in the world to pay those bonds. Yeah. Well, that's precisely what they're doing with the Chiefs, is saying your impact goes beyond just the neighborhood you're in to the entire community.
Mary asks, could there be anti-ICE protests to the Country Club Plaza, as we saw this week, if the city gives the shopping center approval to privatize its sidewalks?
Right, that's something that's going through the process right now, and this Plaza says that it wants to leave the sidewalks open 24/7, make it visible, make it, people to leisurely shop along the plaza, but they would have the right to refuse people to come on their private property.
As long as it was a peaceful demonstration, I find it hard, just the optics of that something like that wouldn't be allowed.
Well, Dan picks up on Dave Helling's new Substack column this week that claims Kansas City residents can still force a public vote on a Royals ballpark by collecting signatures to put the issue on the ballot. Dave, anybody
that.
Now
I
doing
that?
Yeah.
We're not aware of anyone doing it. We're not aware of any city council member stepping forward. The deadline is January 27th for the April ballot. That's far too quickly for anything to be voted on then. And what I tried to write about is what happened with the airport, which is there were disgruntled people then worried about the airport, and so they got together petition signatures and forced the council to adopt a vote on a vote. Whether that happens with the Royals or not is not clear. I was trying to point out when the mayor says, well, we don't have to vote on this, that's not exactly the case.
A viewer, Janice, really listens to the show because she said when Dave Helling said in his Big Story Missed answer last week, he claimed there's an effort behind the scenes to run train tracks to the new Chiefs Stadium so it can connect directly to Kansas City. She asks, why would that work when efforts to connect KCI by rail and to run an east-west streetcar line to the Truman Sports Complex both went nowhere?
Well, and it's likely that the idea of building rail to the new Chiefs Stadium will also go nowhere because it's so expensive and difficult and the feds have stopped paying for it. But there's been talk of east-west rail transit in Kansas City for years, long before the Chiefs ever thought about going out there, in part because there are jobs at the Legends that it's very difficult for Kansas Cityans to get to, and light rail might
help. The last estimate I saw, a light rail line between KCI and downtown, which of course has been talked about for years, you're talking $10 or $11 billion. And Dave's right, the feds aren't getting involved in that anymore.
This would be like half the distance, though, as going to KCI, so that makes it a lot more doable, and you've got two states involved.
And you would help Wyandotte County. And again, we talked a little bit about what Wyandotte County gets out of this. Maybe that discussion can pick up a little bit in terms of mass transit. That would help the county.
When you said
well.
That last week, what I did think about was, the whole issue of the buses, that's an ongoing issue. Who's funding the buses? Right. Is that an ask that could take place? Yes. That we are having a link to the new stadium and funding bus service across our metropolitan
right.
area.
Absolutely.
Could that be a bi-state tax, the first one we've had since the renovation of Union Station?
Perhaps. I don't know. I think we're a very car-centric place.
But that would be on playing against this backdrop of the breakdown of the truce in the border war. It would require interstate cooperation. Okay. It just seems unlikely.
I'm just trying to be uplifting on this show. All right. Now, there were lots of stories we didn't get to this week, including the Royals spending nearly $5 million to move its outfield wall about 10 feet. They say it could earn them about 30 more home runs a season. Another week, another data center, this time plans for a $6 billion artificial intelligence campus in Independence. It's official. Bus fares are coming back in Kansas City for the first time since the pandemic. $2 single fares start in June. And after 10 years, Boulevard is no more, though there's no more. The official reason, though, given for ending the decade-old music and beer festival wasn't given. But did you pick one of those stories, Chris, or something completely different?
The Boulevardia story
it is interesting.
Touched a nerve with me. And what they said was that last year is going to be the last year that there hadn't been plans for a 26. Maybe it was one of those events that ran its course. These are expensive events to carry out. They're very labor intensive. I think the risk that comes with these events is far greater than it used to be. Maybe it was a combination of all of that.
Yeah, and they thought as they do it in the summer, there's nobody going to be coming to town, and there's nobody going to be wanting to see it.
Yeah, right.
World Cup going on. Why would anybody care, Dave?
What is this Boulevardia thing? I don't know what that is. Chris Kobach filed for attorney general, re-election as attorney general in Kansas. That puts the end to the speculation that I was involved in and others that he might run for governor in Kansas. He's long coveted that job, but apparently not. He's out of the field.
Charlie.
I went on a kind of a sadder note. Chris Wells was murdered in the Northland of Kansas City on Monday, and we've been digging through this and finding out that he's had the suspect, the defendant in this case, has had a long list of complaints and 301 calls and police and no contact orders and things placed on him. So we're digging a little bit more on what could have happened to maybe prevent a homicide like this.
And Brian.
A different data center got my attention this week. KCUR Savannah Holly Bates reported on the data center that now occupies the Kansas City Star's old printing press building and how they're one of the first recipients of a $100 million clean energy loan that draws attention to the massive amount of energy and water resources that data centers can consume. It also has raised interest in the Kansas City Council about whether there needs to be more attention to zoning and regulation. One other breaking news story that as we are taping this, Chris Good, the owner of Ruby Jean's Juicery, officially announced his candidacy for the Kansas City Council 3rd District at-large seat. That's the one currently held by Melissa Patterson-Hazley. He sometimes has been a critic of city leaders, so it'll be interesting to see how that campaign plays out.
Free smoothies for all, if you vote for me, I'm assuming will be one of the taglines.
That
Thank you for
be
that,
illegal,
Brian.
Nick, so
all righty. Okay, perhaps not. I'm just trying to be uplifting and fun. All righty. And on that, we will say our week has been reviewed, courtesy of KSHB's Charlie Keegan and KNBC's Chris Katz. From KCUR, Brian Ellison and news icon Dave Helling, and I'm Nick Haynes. From all of us here at Kansas City PBS, be well, keep calm, and carry on.